the speaker notes are actually available on my website, so you can get those now, so you don't have to worry about taking notes, because most of that's in the speaker notes. I'll start with who I am. I'm not going to go over all of this, because I think it'll trickle in as I give examples throughout the presentation. But I have been in the industry professionally for 18 years, working full-time in all kinds of random positions. I actually started my career as a system administrator. I've done market research, I've done program management, project management, I've managed teams of people, I've been a blogger, I've run events, just about everything under the sun that you can do in technology. I've probably done a bit of it at one point or another. But now, I've been focused on working with online communities, and particularly open source communities. I've been doing that pretty much for about 12 years in some form or another. So I've been doing the community thing and the open source thing for a long time, and I love it. So I feel like I've sort of finally, after all of this meandering around that I did in my career, I finally found the place where I feel most at home, and I'm really happy doing it. So I think that's important. Let me just do a quick survey. How many of you have been in the technology field professionally for less than a year? A couple? It's okay, you can raise your hand. 1 to 5? 6 or more? Okay. That just gives me a feel for where to focus the presentation. I'll cover things that are relevant to all of those audiences, but it gives me a way to focus. I'm not going to talk about this in a lot of detail, but I have sort of broken the talk up into 4 main sections: getting a job, making the most of a job, showing your expertise, which has been talked about quite a bit earlier, and planning your career. So with that, I'll just dive right in. And then I said I had 4 main sections. This is not actually one of them, but it's something that has implications throughout the presentation and sort of underlies a lot of this, which is networking. And I think all of the other presenters have talked about this in one form or another, and I just wanted to emphasize, one, that it's important through all stages of your career. But it's also not about being slimy and used car salesman-like. So you see a lot of networking events where it's just people exchanging business cards, and you just feel dirty when you come out of it. That is not what networking is about. That's wrong. It's about being genuinely interested in people and learning about what they do. Because if you're not genuinely interested in the person that you're talking to, you're probably just talking to the wrong person and you should move on, find someone who's interesting to you. But the reality is that careers in technology have such a huge, broad scope that the only way you're ever going to know about some of these jobs is if you go out and talk to people. I've known anthropologists who worked at Intel who actually just went out in the field and watched people use technology. People who've had like just amazing jobs in technology that you would never even know were a job in technology unless you spend time talking to some of these people. So I think of networking as like learning about things, honestly about making new friends. To be honest, I've met a lot of people throughout my career, especially working in open source. And, I can travel all over the world, and there's probably somebody that I know or a meetup going on that I can join. And it's been a really fantastic thing for me. But as Nadine mentioned, it's not all about just offline, in-person networking. It's also about all of the networking that you do online as well, through IRC, social media, mailing lists, online communities, any of that. And there are lots of different ways to do it, and I think we've mentioned all of these in previous presentations, so I'm not going to go over them in any kind of detail, but the local stuff that you can do, the user groups and organizations, professional organizations, things like ADA Initiative are really fantastic, and industry events like this one where you can get out and actually meet people. So this is important, and I'll talk about it throughout the rest of the presentation in each one of these sections. So I'm going to start with the getting a great job portion. So what I'm talking about when I'm talking about getting a great job, I'm not necessarily talking about changing companies. So it could be getting your very first job out of college. It could be moving to a brand new company and doing something completely different. It could be a new job in an existing company. And I think all of this really applies. But again, contacts and networking are really, really important because, and I think Nadine mentioned this, but a lot of jobs aren't really advertised or aren't posted right away. A lot of times they don't post jobs until they have somebody in mind for them. Some of them never get posted. Companies who are eager to hire smart people may hire someone without a job posting at all because they think that they would be a good fit for the organization, a good fit for the team, and could do something interesting at the company. I'll give you a couple examples from my past work. So my very first job out of college, I got because my stepdad, who works on the factory floor of a manufacturing company, sent my resume to a friend that he knew who worked in the corporate headquarters, who knew someone else who worked in the IT department. And I ended up with this really sweet gig as a Unix system administrator right out of college. And it was exactly what I wanted to do. And it was an awesome job, but they didn't have a posting for it. I never would have been considered for it if I hadn't known somebody. And so, you know, even though this is not a professional contact, this is my stepdad who works in a factory, and, you know, he somehow got my resume to the right person for me to get hired. So these contacts, don't underestimate the contacts. They don't have to be semi-famous people. They don't have to be executives at companies. It really can be just about anybody. I've had other gigs that have come in through speaking. So I got my first, like, full-time community manager job where I was doing it 100% of the time for a dedicated community because I was speaking at a conference. And a guy that was on the board of directors of this company who was having all kinds of community problems looked at me and he was like, hey, so can we kind of hire you to do this thing? And I wasn't looking for a job. It came out of nowhere, and it was just because I was speaking at a conference. I've gotten other jobs because of side projects that I've had. The job that I have right now at Puppet Labs, I actually got because I'd been just sort of offering free advice to the CEO and past community managers about what community managers do. So I'd kind of coached their previous ones on metrics, which I just happened to know something about open source metrics, and talked to the CEO a little bit about what I thought he needed in a community manager, all the while telling him, I'm not going to ever come work for you. I'm happy doing what I'm doing, but this is what I think you need because you're a cool startup, you're right in my hometown, and I want you to be successful. And then somehow that turned into a job, so I'm not going to complain. It's an awesome job. I also want to talk about required skills, because most of the jobs that I've been offered have included required skills that I did not have. The funny thing about required skills is they're often a wish list more than reality. Sometimes they're put together by the HR person and don't even reflect what the technical team wants. We mentioned earlier about the requiring 5 years of experience in a technology that hasn't existed that long. There's a lot of that going on in the required skills section of any job posting. So what I want to emphasize is do not ever let a gap in the required skills prevent you from actually applying for something that looks interesting and that you think you can do. The key is you have to really think you can do that, and you have to be honest that you don't have these required skills during the job interview. And that's where you'll find out how important it is. Because if it's super important that you have this particular required skill, you're probably not going to get the job. But you can talk about how your other experience will help you learn it. And in a lot of cases, they may be willing to train you for it. Or it may be that required skill, they have somebody else who could do that, and they're willing to maybe tweak the job a little bit. But a lot of hiring managers will really overlook those gaps if they think that you would be the best person for the job. So never let that stand in the way of applying for a really cool gig. I feel like we've talked about this quite a bit, and this has been sort of a theme throughout the day, has been on learning new skills and keeping up to date. There are so many great resources, free resources online nowadays to help you learn new technologies. Code Academy, Coursera, books, inexpensive classes at the local community college. There are all kinds of ways that you can learn new things. And so that's, you know, the self-taught route is one way to go, especially if you're establishing your career and there's just some other technology that you want to learn. The degree thing is kind of interesting. I have a computer science degree. I have an MBA. And for a lot of employees, I think that the bachelor's degree really matters. But I think it just matters that you have one, not necessarily what it's in. We have sysadmins at the company with philosophy degrees. I have someone on my community team with a history degree. We have all kinds of people with all sorts of different degrees. And it's been that way in just about every company I've ever worked in. So not having a bachelor's degree can be a barrier. And I do think that the first bachelor's degree is worth the money. So a lot of people will argue with me about this. But I actually think that the others likely aren't worth the cost from a strictly professional standpoint. So I think if you've always dreamed of having a PhD and it's something that you really, really want to do, then go for it. If you're getting a PhD just because you think it's going to help you get a job, it's probably not in the technology field, with the exception of a few specialized areas that require them. So there may be certain companies, or you know, if you wanted to work at a university teaching, then you probably need one. But it's not necessarily, what I'm trying to get at here is not degrees are bad. I have them of my own. I do someday want to go get a PhD just because I would love to have one. But I think that it's not going to help me professionally, necessarily. What will help is making sure that you can learn new things and then demonstrate them in some way. So through GitHub links, contributions to open source projects, really visible volunteer work. So Nadine talked about this a little bit with respect to your resume, having this visible work and you know, whether it's volunteer work or work that you've done for pay. Some examples from my standpoint, I used to organize a lot of Portland technology events. I organized the first bar camp there. I organized the first Ignite Portland with a team of people that we pulled together to do these. And I learned how to organize events just because I saw this gap in my own technology community that I wanted to fill. I was like, nobody's doing these cool events, and I bet we can figure this out. So I learned an awful lot about how to organize events. And now I've organized little tiny events as bits and pieces of what I do, but it's not been, I've never done it full time, but it was a skill that I learned as a result of volunteering in my own local community. Open source metrics were kind of similar. It wasn't something that was being done necessarily at some of the companies that I worked for, but I thought it was a good thing to do because I think that being able to show metrics about the community that you're involved in and how important they are, I thought it was important. So I learned how to do it on my own and started pulling together metrics. And then at some point I kind of became known as one of the people who knows how to do open source or metrics for open source communities, which was kind of an interesting thing, which I still do. I just love data. I just like to play with data. It's a hobby of mine, I suppose. Makes me a dork. I'm okay with that. Pay. So as Allison said earlier, money isn't everything. It shouldn't be the primary motivator, but you will feel better about your job if you feel like you're being paid fairly. So it's not about making the most money, but it's about believing that you're being paid in a way that is fair for your situation. I've taken lower paying jobs to move to a particular startup where you know they couldn't afford the salary that I was making at name this big company. But I felt like it was fair. It was a fair salary for me. It was fair for the company, and I thought it worked. So the point is, get paid what you're worth given the situation. It's not all about the money, but being paid fairly will make you feel better about your job. Ways to get paid fairly: do your research. This is way harder when you're working on your first job. When you're working on your first job, you can kind of compare job offers and get a feel for what's fair in your industry. You can do some research using online tools. For those of us that have been in the industry for a while, this gets significantly easier because you use your past salary, your experience, your expertise, the job level, all of those to justify pay. And know what you want to make and what you're willing to accept. And take the full package into account. Look at stock options, look at bonuses, look at benefits, the whole thing. I'm going to talk for a minute about negotiating. But you know, if they give you a good offer that is what you wanted to make, you don't necessarily need to negotiate just to negotiate. So I've heard a lot of people say, this feels like this feels like they made me a good offer, but I feel like I should negotiate. And I wouldn't say that if you feel like you got a really good offer and it's really what you wanted, that you necessarily have to negotiate. I usually do, so like Nadine mentioned, she tends to be fairly upfront about salary requirements fairly early in the process. I'm the exact same way. I'm really upfront about what I want to make. The initial number that I give them is slightly on the high side of what I expect, but still realistic. So I pick a number that's a realistic expectation for pay for the job that I'm applying for. But I also make sure it's slightly on the high side of what I expect. And I have had some companies say yes to those high numbers. So it certainly doesn't hurt. I also set a bottom number that's usually, I don't know, somewhere around my current salary, slightly above the current salary, depending on the size of the company. And then, you know, that's the number that if they offer me something below that, I'm not likely to accept it at all. Unless we can come to some other kind of arrangement. But if they come in, you know, if they come in lower than what you gave them as your initial high number, then ask for a little more stock. Ask for, you know, a bigger percentage of bonus. Ask for, you know, some other incentives that could be included in the package. There's generally something they will negotiate on. And say no if you don't think it's fair. And I have to be honest, this is kind of the model that I've been using for a number of years, and it has served me extremely well. I'm happy with what I make, and I feel like I'm being paid fairly for the job that I do. I'm going to talk again about networking. The important thing when you're talking about making the most of your existing job is to look at networking both from an internal perspective and an external perspective. And you need contacts inside of your company and outside of your company. I've made mistakes actually swinging both ways. So I have had jobs where, especially early in my career, where all of my contacts were internal, and people internally knew exactly what I was capable of. I was respected for the work that I was doing. Nobody outside of the company had ever heard of me. So had I gotten laid off, I would have been kind of screwed at that point because I wouldn't have had external contacts that I could rely on to any great extent. I've also made the mistake kind of on the other side where most of my contacts have been external outside the company because I was doing so much work in the local technology community and in open source communities and in other areas where it got to the point where at some point I realized that all of these people that I work with on a day-to-day basis don't really understand what I do. And I haven't really been clear with them about what I'm capable of. And so I've actually kind of made the mistake on both sides. But you have to have some balance between the two, between internal contacts and external contacts, if you want to really, truly make the most of your existing job. And this also gets towards mentors and allies. So, you know, mentors can be a great thing. It doesn't have to be a formal mentorship. This is, you know, maybe somebody outside of your management structure that you can look to for advice, somebody that you trust to ask the stupid questions of. I wished I had known how important this was when I first started my career and actually found someone to do this because I came out of my computer science degree and it was one of those, I was in the math college, you never took a business class because business classes were for stupid people. And I went into my first professional job and I felt so stupid because I didn't know anything. They were talking about return on investments and revenue and profit and, you know, corporate numbers and stock, and I'm just like drooling on myself. I don't know what any of this stuff means, which is actually why I went back to get my MBA. But I let the company pay for it, which is a pretty good way to go. But these mentors can help you navigate this in a way that you're maybe not going to be able to do yourself. Somebody else talked about allies earlier. These are also incredibly important. Knowing people that you can trust within your organization who will stick up for you when you have a problem, or who will help you through a tough situation, or somebody that you can get, you know, feedback on that email that you have to send to that executive who did something really stupid. So mentors and allies, don't underestimate the importance of that. And then I mentioned earlier, just, you know, being able to learn from other people and using it as a discovery tool, even within your organization, for your existing job, to look at what are the other opportunities within my company. Or what are the other opportunities within my industry that I wouldn't have known about otherwise? Volunteering is also important. And I don't mean this necessarily in the sense of volunteering with nonprofit organizations. I think that's a piece of it. But what I'm talking about is offering to pick up interesting work, or, and some of the panelists talked about this earlier too, but you know, looking at that thing that you find interesting and volunteering to help out with it, just because you think you're gonna learn a new skill, or it's, you know, it's something that you wanna learn about. At big companies, being on committees to do things can also be a good way to do this as well. You get to see some of what other people do and learn some new things. When I was at Intel, I used to represent the team on various committees that I thought were interesting, like, you know, work-life balance committees, or, you know, a committee to do something or other that sounded interesting to me at the time. I've also volunteered to pick up technical tasks occasionally just to keep my skills sharp. So when I was at Jive Software, they used to let me, we used to use our own community platform as the platform for our community, and we upgraded it every 3 weeks. Based on our build cadence. So we would deploy the updates to the community platform every 3 weeks. And for a while, they were letting me do that when they were really small and we had one sysadmin who was hopelessly overloaded. I knew nothing about Java. It was a Java app. I learned how to do it. And it was fun. It was just because I volunteered. The sysadmin was busy. He was like, "You used to be a sysadmin. Can you do this thing for me?" I was like, "Sure. What the heck?" But it should be interesting to you. And it should be a way to learn something new or demonstrate some skills that you have that people might not know. Don't volunteer for the crappy work and let people take advantage of you. Now, we all get stuck doing the crap work from time to time, but don't volunteer for it unless you get something out of it. This is something that Nadine talked about, how many people have a hard time bragging about what they do in the context of a resume. But everything that she said about resumes applies to what I'm going to talk about as well, because the reality is your manager probably manages a whole team of people, and he has to keep track of what all of them are doing, and he or she is not going to notice everything that you do. That is just not going to happen. And I think that a lot of us come out of university where, you know, we've typically had somebody grading our papers who, like, you know, knows everything that we do, and in the professional world, it's just not like that. They won't notice unless you tell them. And you really do have to be your own best advocate when it comes to dealing with your manager, with the executive team, with the other teams within your organization. So some examples, you know, regular status updates, manager one-on-ones, quick emails to talk about the things that you do. I do this all the time with my manager. And then have some documentation that will allow you to easily prepare for performance reviews. So, like Nadine, I keep you know, at least a weekly kind of status report of what I've been doing. Even if it's not required by the company, we do weekly status reports at Puppet Labs, but other companies where it wasn't required, I still did it, because at the end of the year, I want to have something that I can look back on to show my manager, hey, this is what I did. And like when you're working on a resume, you know, Nadine's examples really showed the impact of what you were doing as opposed to the task that you performed. And that's also critical when you're talking about performance reviews, when you're talking about updates to your manager. So for example, I launched a contributor license agreement application. So I could tell my manager, hey, I launched the contributor license agreement app, which sounds, you know, whatever, you launched something. Or I can say that, you know, I launched this app that improved the process for accepting community contributions to Puppet and reduced the time required for developers when accepting those contributions. So I could talk about what the impact was to the organization or to the company instead of just talking about the task. And this is really important when it comes to performance reviews and updates for your manager. Because they're not psychic. They're not gonna know what you do unless you tell them. And they're not gonna know the impact of what you did unless you tell them. I'm gonna transition a little bit into another section talking about expertise and being an expert and actually sharing that expertise with people. So we all have expertise to share. You don't have to be the expert in some particular technology to have valuable knowledge that people can learn from. I can't count the number of times I'll talk to somebody and they're like, oh, you know, but I don't know as much about this as, you know, as somebody else, or, you know, I'm not an expert. But, you know, we all learn things in our day-to-day job, and sharing those things that we've learned, the mistakes that we've made, the processes that we use, can be incredibly helpful to other people. And sharing this, you know, sharing this information both internally and externally. So like I said, you know, earlier with networking and contacts, you also need to share information inside and out. So putting together documentation for your team and how to do this thing that you do really well, or, you know, writing a how-to guide for your users, or writing blog posts. I'll talk about that in the next slide. Personal branding. So I think we've touched on this in a few of the other presentations. This gives people a place online to learn about you. And you can kind of think of it as sort of a, you know, resume plus plus. But it really is also one of the primary ways to share expertise. You know, having a blog or you know, something like that where you're sharing the things that you've learned, the things that you're thinking about, the technologies that you're using, can be really incredibly valuable. And I think you learn more by doing this, because every time I, you know, I'm like, oh, I really know how to do this. I'm going to write a blog post on it. And then I'll realize that there's that one aspect that I'm not quite so sure, or, you know, that I want to make sure that I understand completely. So I'll do some more research on that area. Or I'll want some things to link to. So I'm like, oh, I wonder what, you know, these other people are saying about this topic. So I'll go and read some other things that, you know, I might not have done if I wasn't writing about it for someone else. So I can give you an example. So I was, this has been years and years and years ago, and I was writing a blog about open source, and I got an email from Alyssa Kamahort, who turns out I had no idea who she was. She's the founder of, one of the co-founders of BlogHer. And she was like, hey, you write this great open source blog, and I'm pulling together a panel of women in open source for South by Southwest. Do you want to be on my panel? And this is someone who's, you know, well-respected. I didn't, you know, I'd never met her. And I got invited to do this cool thing just because she liked what I wrote on my blog, which for me was a real eye-opener. I was like, wow, first of all, people read my blog. This is good. But, you know, I started to think about the things, you know, just getting noticed and how that helps you. And it's been a really good thing for my career over the years, for sure. But you also, and we've talked about this earlier, you really do need to manage your online presence and be a bit careful about what you post online. Because they will Google you before that interview. Public speaking is another way to share your expertise. So a lot of people are afraid of public speaking. Allison talked earlier about doing whatever it takes to get over your fears. So as an example, I used to be terrified of public speaking. I would, and not even just in groups like this, but, you know, I would be at a conference room table with five other people, and I would want to say something, and, like, my hands would start to shake, I'd get a little nauseous, I'd start to get all sweaty, because I had to talk in front of people. And that, to me, was so incredibly uncomfortable that I couldn't imagine doing that. And now, 15 years later, I can get up in front of hundreds of people, and I don't even think about it. I really, really don't even think about it. But I hit a point in my career where I realized this fear of speaking in front of people is going to mean that I never get anywhere career-wise. Because unless you can get up and talk about the things that you're doing, you're not going to advance very far. And so I started doing it in smaller, you know, smaller environments. I would volunteer to do presentations, being absolutely terrified of doing this presentation, but I would volunteer and make myself do it because I thought it was important. And the sad, sad reality is that we do not have enough technical women speaking at technical conferences. And I don't, it's not all about the fear. There's certainly many, many other elements that are involved in this. But, you know, I run the presentation selection for our conferences. And it is very difficult to find women who will speak, particularly on system administration topics. So it's really, really hard. But speaking is a great way to share what you know and become known as an expert. So I would encourage all of you to think about you know, submitting talks to places, even if you're a little terrified. It's a good way to get over that fear. But I do really wish we would have more women speaking at technical conferences. And your odds are good for getting accepted because there's not a lot of competition. So you know, I don't accept women speakers just because they're women speakers. I accept good topics, but I do look very hard at the gender diversity of our conferences. And I've had a couple. You know, we do these puppet camps in various regions, and I had one where I was literally the only woman in the room and 130 people, and that has not happened in a very long time. And that was in another country far away. But it still happens. So, you know, we really, really, really do need to get out there. So I encourage you to do that. And I can say, you know, this has been a good thing for me too. When I did some freelance consulting for a while, and I got quite a few inquiries from people who saw me speak at conferences. And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't immediately after I spoke at the conference, which was kind of an interesting thing. So a lot of times I would get calls from somebody or an email that would say, hey, I saw you speak at that community conference 2 years ago, and we're building this community now, and I was wondering if you could offer some advice. And so that was years later after doing this. But it's a good thing to do. It also gets you better access to speakers, so you get to network with some of the smartest people at the conference, which is really, really good. There's usually speaker dinners or speaker lounge or something where you get access to other speakers. And as a bonuses, most conferences give you a free ticket to the event. So you get to go and you also get to learn. So by speaking at the event, you're more likely to convince your manager to let you go because you don't have to pay the conference fee, with the exception of a lot of nonprofit run conferences. But a lot of the commercial conferences, like the O'Reilly conferences and those, if you get a speaking gig, you don't have to pay the conference fee. You just have to pay travel to get there. So it's a really great way to learn more about something if you can get in as a speaker. Now my last section, planning your career. You do really need to think about what you want. And get out and talk to people. So I've talked about this a lot, so I'm not gonna go over it in a whole lot of detail, but talk to people who are doing interesting things. Read about jobs that you don't know what they do. Get a little more information and really think about some of those things that you might want to do. So as an example, early in my career, I wanted to be a corporate executive. I wanted to be a vice president because, you know, that's the way you move up the corporate ladder. And then this was when I was still working in IT. I actually was working on a project that involved working with most of the vice presidents at this very large manufacturing company that I worked for many years ago. And the more I worked with vice presidents, the less I wanted to be one. They sit in meetings all day, they don't get to do anything cool anymore, they get to just manage the people who get to do the fun stuff. And they work, you know, like a bazillion hours a week. So it didn't take me long to realize I do not want to be a corporate VP or corporate executive at a very large company. But I didn't know that until I actually got to see what they did up close and personal and talked to a bunch of them. And then having a plan. Now my next slide is going to be about deviating from the plan, so just keep that in mind. But set some goals. What do you want to be doing in a few years? And not just doing from a work perspective, but what should your life be like? And how does your career fit into that? And then start building the skills that are required to get to those goals. And make sure that, you know, the next job that you take builds some new skills that you think is going to help you achieve your, you know, long-term goals. And then start writing, speaking, sharing the stuff that I talked about earlier so that people actually know that you have these new skills and could get this new job should one open up. You know, and that's kind of how I ended up working with open source communities. I started working with open source communities in a very small way when I was at Intel. They looked at me and they needed somebody to do some investigation into Linux tools and developer tools that were open source, like GCC and things like that for enabling for new processors. And they looked at me, they were like, you used to do Unix, that's kind of like Linux, I bet you can figure this thing out. But the more I started working with these open source communities, which from the outside looked completely chaotic, and I had no idea, you know, I was like, how do all of these people just do this stuff and magically you get a Linux kernel? And then I started really looking at what these communities were like. There's this like hidden structure that most people don't know about. There's all this stuff going on, and they're fascinating. So I started blogging and talking about it, and then started doing more and more work with open source communities, and eventually worked it into a full-time job, which was what I wanted to do. Now deviate from the plan. So I have had all kinds of random, unexpected opportunities that turned out to be great for my career. I actually took a year. I stepped completely out of technology, completely out of IT, and I did market research on bearings and steel for a year, which sounds really boring, but I actually learned a lot, and it was kind of fascinating. I was really tired of spreadsheets by the time I was done and knew I didn't want to do it forever, but I learned a lot about how people manipulate data. I learned a lot about statistics. I learned a lot about finding information. I had this job back before the internet had everything, so I literally would call up libraries to get books which had data about the things that I was researching. But I learned a tremendous amount from that experience. But it was not in any way part of my plan. But I thought that it was an interesting opportunity, and I knew that I could learn a lot by doing it, so I took it. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, have some plan for where you want to go, but if something really interesting and really unique comes up, deviate from the plan. Or drop the plan if you realize that what you are planning isn't exactly what you wanted to do, which I've certainly been in that situation. So just to summarize, wrap all of this together, networking is important. We talked about this. Know what you want from your career, salary expectations, what expertise, what technologies you want to work with. Think about how what you want will make you happier. This is important. It's not just about the making money, but think about how the work you do could make you happier. Experiment. Volunteer, keep learning new skills, whether it's the ones that will help you in your current job or in future jobs that you don't have yet, and then share what you learn and know. Even if you think it's not new, it will be useful for people. If it's something that you learned and you got something of value out of, sharing that information with other people will be helpful. That is my last slide. I will open it up for questions. We have 5 minutes. I'm sure somebody has a question. I wasn't that complete.
Conferences that you go to, Ignite Talks and Lightning Talks. Mm-hmm. So Lightning Talks are unstructured, 5 minutes, talk about anything. We almost had them here if we had room today. And Ignite Talks, they have Ignite karaoke at Velocity, where it's the slide is something you've never seen before, and you get up on stage and you just make stuff up, and it just keeps advancing. It's like 5 minutes, or it's short. It's hysterical, and as long as you can laugh at yourself, it's a great way to just sort of get over your public speaking fear and get up there and just do it.
Yep. And there are lots of good public speaking courses, too. Go ahead and answer your question. But that's a really good way to get over some of that fear as well, in a safe environment.
So I guess I have a slightly different take on this. I have absolutely no fear of public speaking, but I don't necessarily know what I would want to talk about. Do you have any ideas on, you know, how can people figure out what it is that they have something worth saying about?
Yeah, so it turns out that is a very common question. So I gave this talk internally, just because I've never talked about this topic before, ever. I did it kind of because I was on the phone with Ricky, and she encouraged me to submit something to this conference that was career-oriented. So I submitted it, but I gave kind of a dry run of this presentation to a couple of our interns and new employees, women at work. And that's been a very common question, is how do you figure out what to speak about? And I think you have to, Something that's not been a problem for me, and I don't know why. I don't know. But you know, I think you have to find those things that you know about, that you're comfortable with, that you do a lot, that you see other people struggling with. And it doesn't have to be something super complicated. I actually used to do a lot of little 5-minute, 3-minute, I think, actually, like webcasts, screen sharing things on Yahoo Pipes. Because it was this technology that was like super easy to use, but people were afraid of it because it had all these boxes and buttons and people didn't know what to connect to what. And it wasn't something that was particularly complicated, but it was something that, you know, I would have friends look at that, they were like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Can you show me? And so those things that you do that you see other people struggling with, or things that you're just excited and passionate about. So I've seen people give Ignite talks on all kinds of things like robots and chickens. And I saw a CEO at a local technology company give an Ignite talk about how he makes a perfect omelet. So you know, think about those things that you do well, that you see other people struggling with. Or think about those things that you love to talk about because there's something fun to you, whether you know it's a technology or something that you really, really like to do and you think other people should be as excited about it as you are. Those are good candidates. I don't know if there's any other suggestions from the audience.
One other suggestion. When you're at a conference and you say, I really wish they had covered this, that's your talk, even if it's not something you don't know about today. You've got a year to learn about it.
Yeah, when I started doing a lot of the speaking about open source, a lot of that was based on my own research, more than my own expertise.
So I just wanted to reiterate what you were saying about the required skills things. One thing that a lot of my friends come to me with their, you know, help for resumes when they've been laid off from their jobs or whatever. And I see so many people, and not just women, filter themselves out. Yes. They look at a job description and they say, oh, I don't have that, I don't have this, I don't have that, so on and so forth. And they decide before themselves that they're not fit for the job. And I really discourage people from doing that because you're doing yourself a disservice. You have no idea whether that job description is accurate. You might be the perfect candidate. And unless you put your resume in front of those people, you're never going to know. Because, as my ex-husband said, if you don't ask, you don't get. And so if you never put yourself in that situation, you're not going to know whether you're the right person or not.
I actually read this blog article. It was about somebody who looked at women, how women apply for jobs and how men apply for jobs, and it said that if a requirement is 2 to 5 years of experience, the woman won't apply unless she has 3 or 4 or 5 or even more years, whereas the guy will say, well, I got 1.5 years, I can apply for that. So we sort of, you know, like we're hearing today, if you're interested in the job and you have some of the skills, I would apply, because maybe they're not all required, and you'll find out when you apply, maybe they'll bring you in for an interview, and you find out that these are nice-to-haves, and you could learn those, and it would stretch you and make you even stronger technically. I think that's awesome. Do it. And you might learn something from the interview process, even if you don't get the job. You can ask, well, why didn't I, and you know, get some experience interviewing, which is always a good thing.